to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. Looking at the news here, let's see, out of Boston, Associated Press, Roman Catholic Church personnel files recently released detail more shuffling of abusive priests by the Boston Archdiocese, including one who was mired in sexual abuse allegations for 28 years before retiring. All right, no news there. No news there. No kidding. 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. We've got this from Newsweek, January 13th, The Killer Inside Me, about a model inmate and all the people who advocate that he should now go free. 40 years later, he committed brutal murder, and so people want him to go free. So you know what I think we'll do? I think we'll actually read parts of this article and analyze it as we go and see if we can figure out whether or not this guy should go free. Maybe we'll determine he should go free. Is that possible? Well, if he's not guilty, he should go free. And here is a letter to the editor of the Indianapolis Star, sent to them by one of our listeners in Indiana, along with a personal letter to me. Dear Bob, I work with some nicer-than-God Christians who say all we can do is pray for our politicians. My response to them is, when I look at our politicians, I pray for the people. That's good. Really, this is from a guy named Wally. Good, Wally. Then they get mad at me, and they won't talk to me for a few days after comments like that. Christians don't realize that they have been taken out of the battle by do not judge and be tolerant. But Bob, I'm telling you things which you already know. I now realize that we are losing the battle and we are spectators to the de-Christianizing of America. Yeah, I agree. As you know, we recently put up a nativity scene at our courthouse. That took quite a fight. One of the Christians said, gosh, I hope we don't get sued. I replied, that's all right if we do. Jesus can use the publicity. Wally, you are so funny. That's a good point. When I look at our politicians, I pray for the people. That's funny. And we might get sued. That's all right. Jesus can use the publicity. That's funny. Now, that's in his letter to me. What's in his letter to the Indianapolis Star? Wally's from Delphi, Indiana. Delphi. Okay, let's see. Every Christian church that I've walked into over the past 3 years has delivered the same message. Don't judge. Be tolerant of wicked people. Don't offend anyone. Wasn't it Jesus who said, if they hated me, they will surely hate you? I can only conclude that most pastors spend too much time watching TV when they should be reading their Bibles. I would have to say the same applies to the majority of parishioners. You spend so much time watching Will and Grace, you hardly know what the Bible says about Will and Grace. That's pretty good, Wally. Let's see, what else here? I'm trying to lovingly warn my Christian brothers and sisters that secular humanism has found its way not only into government, but into the church. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, too. Now, I shouldn't crinkle up this because, you know, it's a nice letter from a friend. But I can't save it forever. I mean, eventually everything's going to burn, so. Okay. Now, let's see here. You know what I want to get to? We've got a pile of news, but I want to do this Newsweek article. The Killer Inside Me, January 13th, 2003. What's today's date? Oh, the 13th. Okay, that's convenient. All right, the subtitle is He's a Murderer and a Model Inmate. Should Wilbur Ridue go free? However you pronounce his last name, R-I-D-E-A-U. Notice there's no Muhammad in there. This is back when criminals were just normal criminals. They just stole for money. Right today, we have liberals saying that terrorists, it's because of their terrible poverty that people become terrorists. Except that the majority of the 9/11 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. So much for that theory. But at any rate, this guy, Wilbur Ridue, we'll just go into the article. And we'll see if we think this guy should be released. We'll do some of this. We'll take a couple calls, go back to the article, back and forth. 1-800-836-9278. Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Lafargue is walking a visitor around the interior perimeter of Lake Charles, Louisiana's Louisiana Parish Jail. Now, in Louisiana, they don't have counties. They have parishes. That must be because of the Catholic influence in their formative years. Most of the prisoners are black. Most are young, and most are shirtless, showing off chiseled abs and biceps. All right, and this article is about this guy, Wilbur, who also happens to be black. And this, in fact, I didn't read Newsweek this issue, but a gentleman who comes to our Sunday night Bible study, he's been coming for years, right? William, hasn't he been? He's been coming for years, almost since we began the Sunday night Bible studies at Denver Bible Church. And William, he's a black gentleman, and he cut out this article for me. So it says, in one of the barracks, well, it's a barracks-like room, sits an older man, black, 60, with a neatly trimmed mustache. A pile of legal papers is stacked in front of him. He looks up and holds a visitor's gaze for 30 seconds. Now, that's weird, huh? If you're in a prison and some guy, they're saying he's a model prison, he should go free. And if you're out in the street and you look at somebody and they just stare you down, generally that's a sign of, you know, an anger problem. Generally, not necessarily. But for 30 seconds, he holds a visitor's gaze. Then a minute. Wow, 60 seconds. Finally, he goes back to his work, nods and looks down. Now, we're going to take a call as soon as we get back from this break and then analyze this story. Listener-supported radio right here in Bobignart Live. Should a convicted murderer go free? Now, this is a commercial break. This isn't the show. This is a commercial break. But how do we decide as Christians? If you are a Christian, if you're not a Christian, call us. We'll send you Mount Moriah, the video, for free. But if you're a Christian, should a convicted murderer who's sorry go free? Should he be executed? Should he be kept in jail, locked up for 50 years? Which is it? It's rather important that we know the truth. And so many Christians base really important decisions on cliches, on rather weak understanding of the Bible, on a handful of verses when they may or may not know whether their understanding of those verses contradicts 100 other statements in the Bible, right? That's the state of affairs that we're in. So what we do at Bobignart Live, after more than a quarter century of studying the Bible, is we take the overview story of the whole Bible and apply it to the issues of our day and give Christians tools to answer rightly, authoritatively, convincingly on these important issues and thereby have open doors to bring unbelievers to the Lord and help Christians grow stronger. If you like what we do, please give us a call, 1-800-8-NYART. You can help us out financially with a monthly pledge. You can purchase our plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible, our audio tape, Bible studies and seminars, our videos, debates, and so many fun topics. 1-800-836-9278. That's 1-800-8-NYART. If you're tuning in on the website at kgov.com, well, you can find our phone number right there on the web. You could email us. Although we get so much email, that's less reliable. It's better to call. Is that right? I'm asking our staff. If you need to place an order, if you don't need to place an order, oh, on the web at kgov.com, we have a store. We have an internet store. Now, that's the best way because 24 hours a day, somebody's running the store. And the email at the store is really the most reliable way to get us because that's from people who are purchasing things. And if we get hundreds of emails about, you know, Bob, did you see the article in Newsweek? It's hard to follow up on all those. Sometimes it's hard to read all those. But the calls and the store orders, they get right through. All right. 1-800-836-9278. We're going to the phones in just half a minute here. Back in the lieutenant colonel's office, the warden says, that was Wilbur Redoux. The pods, they hold 24 men, but there's only 18 in Wilbert's. Now, why would they keep his pod with fewer people? The warden says, we don't want an inmate who wants to be famous to stab him. Because Wilbert, well, he's more than just a prisoner around here. So they're trying to protect Wilbert because maybe another inmate would become famous just by killing Wilbert. All right. Well, let's get to more of that story in a moment. First, let's go to Detroit, Michigan. Tom, speak your mind. Hello, Tom.
Hello, am I on? This is Johnny.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Tom?
Please. Johnny from California.
All right, let's ask Tom in Detroit to hold while we talk to Johnny in Compton, California. Go ahead, Johnny.
Right. Bob, you're probably quite familiar with Governor Ryan of Illinois clearing out the 167 death row members over in
yeah,
in Illinois.
From death row, right.
Right.
Republican governor.
Right. I want to know your feelings on that because, I mean, you know about our system of criminal justice, how it's just a system. And you know it's corrupt. Actually, it can be corrupt also on the prosecution side. So when you end up with guys who are getting exonerated, what do you do? What is the right thing to do? Well, I think you take it on a case-by-case basis. But
well, yeah, if you have evidence that a particular criminal has been unjustly convicted, then you do everything you can to overturn that. He should be let go.
Right.
On the other hand, if criminals have been justly convicted, it's equally evil to be merciful to them. It's equally evil.
Right. Well, you know, the criminal justice system is in the hands of fallible people and some people who say they have the motives of justice when they really don't. How do you feel comfortable with the way our criminal justice system is corrupt, yet we do have a death penalty that possibly does innocent people to death.
It's certainly possible to convict the wrong person, right? That's possible. So some Christians will argue, well, then therefore we should disallow the death penalty because we might convict the wrong person. But back when God commanded the death penalty, in the Old and New Testaments, Johnny, was it possible back then that judges might convict the wrong person?
It was possible, but at least there was a pretty good deterrent because God basically commanded that those who falsely convict or falsely witness, I should say, they should get the same penalty that a person who was charged is supposed to get.
Well,
now, we don't have that.
Hey, Johnny, for one, I don't. I don't think God states that explicitly. We could draw that from the principles. Oh, you're talking about perjury?
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but perjury is against the law today.
Well, it's against the law, but the person who commits perjury is going to get a very, very light, if any, sentence.
If any. Usually you get no sentence, right.
That's
true. I feel
like we had something
like
that.
That's true, but hey, Johnny, but it doesn't matter. At any point in human history, you can't count on the judges to routinely do right because they're, for one, they're fallible, and two, they're sinful. And so you have to assume that at any form of government, human government, any style of criminal justice system, you have fallible, sinful men who are in charge.
Now, how in the world can you make this case to an unbeliever? How in the world can you make this case to an unbeliever who believes that when you die, that's all there is?
Well, to start with, is what I said accurate? Is it accurate? You sort of jumped from how could this be to how do we convince an unbeliever? So I want to know, is it accurate to say that throughout all of human history, there's always been this same problem that you can't reliably trust judges because they're sinful and they're liable to error?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's always been a problem. And even though that's always been a problem, God said, every convicted murderer shall surely be put to death. So God must have had a good reason to set up the criminal justice system that way, even though he knows that human judges are sinful and prone to error.
I agree.
So what would his reasons be? Why would he demand the death penalty for every murderer, even though he knew he was dealing with human judges? Why would he do that?
It must be just the principle of it.
Well, the principle is that a murderer should be put to death.
That's right.
He should be. A convicted murderer should be put to death. But then also what you can see from the Bible as you go through it is that God tells us if we implement the law the way he says, we will have very little crime. And if we don't, we'll likely have a crime epidemic.
That's right.
We read that in the Bible.
That's right. But you see, in this country, we still have a crime epidemic because we don't execute swiftly.
Well, we hardly execute at all. In years that we had over 20,000, 22,000 murders, we have less than 100 executions. So you believe
that a death penalty in any form is better than no death penalty at all?
Well,
because right, we don't have a real death penalty in this country. We
need a swift and painful death penalty for every convicted, capital criminal, for everyone. That's what we need. Does that make sense?
Okay, well, I can agree with that. But I do wonder, how would you make this case to an unbeliever, a so-called conservative unbeliever who believes in a death penalty?
All right.
But they are concerned with innocent people being put to death.
Okay, and they use Illinois as an example.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Well, DNA is excellent. It's extremely reliable for bringing about a conviction. And in many circumstances, it's much less reliable for bringing about an acquittal or as exculpatory evidence. And we've talked about this on the show a number of times. For example, some woman gets murdered on a Saturday night after midnight, 2 a.m. And there's a couple eyewitnesses, spotted one guy with the woman. The guy's arrested. He's charged with raping her, killing her. He confesses to killing her, and he's thrown in jail and put on the death row. And then 15 years later, there's a DNA test done, and lo and behold, it points to someone else. We don't know who. It wasn't his DNA on this woman. Well, that woman may have had relations with her boyfriend earlier that night. and they might have gotten a fight, and she went back to the bar because she was mad at her boyfriend. And then she leaves with some guy who kills her. And the guy, he maybe even confesses to killing her. We've had that. We've had people confess to killing into detailed confessions. And then they find DNA evidence on the victim. It doesn't match the guys who have confessed, and so they let him go. Even though there's a significant argument, heavy-weighted evidence that these people are guilty, but the DNA evidence pointed to somebody else. Well, you could easily have other people's DNA on you when you get killed. So DNA evidence is excellent as a tool of conviction. For example, if a woman gets raped, and there's some guy that there's evidence he did it, and he said, I never saw that woman in my life. And they pull some bodily fluid off the victim, and they do a DNA test, and it matches that guy. So then there are two possibilities. Either that guy was intentionally set up, or he's guilty. And you look at those possibilities, and you can have this extraordinary, confident conviction with DNA. But it's also possible that DNA could be used as exculpatory evidence with virtually no faith whatsoever that this convict actually didn't commit the crime. But since we have people who want to undermine criminal justice and people who want to undermine the death penalty, they shout and parade at every opportunity that we're convicting innocent people.
Right. Well, I don't think you addressed the question, though, Bob.
Yeah, right. That's a secondary matter of, well, okay, how do you convince an unbeliever?
How do you convince an unbeliever who's a conservative who believes?
All right, well, for one, you explain what I just explained to him, that people who are let go by DNA evidence, many of them are guilty. Many of those people are guilty. Like the guys who beat up, and they killed that woman in Central Park some years ago, and they were just all released because DNA evidence pointed to a rapist who was in jail.
Okay.
And so the police all along suspected a sixth participant, but they didn't have any evidence. They had these five guys who gave these extremely detailed confession that they beat and murdered this woman. And so now a sixth guy raped her, and so they let the five go. Because what? Because they all didn't rape her? Oh, no, we have DNA evidence proving who did it. That doesn't mean they weren't accomplices. It doesn't mean that, but that's the way DNA evidence is being used today, with extraordinary disregard for mountains of evidence in case after case.
So
it's being used by people who want to undermine the death penalty.
I really believe that it is being used by people who want to undermine the death penalty. However, the unbelievers who believe when you die, that's it.
Well,
you know, for them.
Right. Well, for one, you can't win an argument with stupid. So if someone denies that God exists, the Bible says he's a fool. And the Bible also says someone who does not take correction is stupid. Is that right? Does the Bible say that?
Yes, it does. It does.
It does. All right. So,
okay.
In fact, here it is, Proverbs 12:1. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, their Bible verse up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we're going to take a commercial break, and you're going to have to wait until later to hear the rest of your warning. Now, this is going to be fun to get to the rest of the warning. A warning in Proverbs 12:1. He who hates correction is stupid. Now, what do people say? You can't call anyone stupid. Well, now that makes sense if no one is stupid. That makes sense. But if somebody is stupid, what's the benefit of not telling him he's stupid? If somebody's a thief or a liar, You know, we had a close friend of the family. I was recently talking to him, and I said, "You are a lying thief." And he apparently disagrees. But if you're a lying thief, you're better off if credible people tell you you are a lying thief. If you're a fool, Jesus called people fools. David called people fools. Well, the Apostle Paul said they were foolish, but basically the same thing. If somebody's a fool and you don't tell them they're a fool, boy, you're not loving your neighbor. So, you know, you're a very intelligent person. Now, someone in the studio audience is saying, if you know someone's a fool and you don't tell them, then you're a fool. And then if you don't tell that person that he's a fool, are you a fool? If that were the case, pretty soon everyone in the world would be a fool. Because we're not going to tell everybody they're a fool. Well, yeah, but there's got to be somebody you know who won't tell somebody he's a fool. So pretty soon, you got to tell everyone you see you're a fool right off the bat. Hi, fool. So anyway, that wouldn't work. I don't think that would work. But, hey, this is a commercial break, and we're not supposed to be talking about content, show content, in the commercial break. We're supposed to be letting people know how to get our Bible study materials so that they could learn things like this for themselves and figure it out. And talk to others and straighten people out, get people saved, get people lost. Sometimes first you have to get them lost before you get them saved. Right? If they think there's no such thing as sin, if they think people are basically good, there's no such thing as hell, they think their immorality is good, then first you have to get them lost. You have to make them realize that they're condemned by God. And by the law of God, then you have a chance of getting them saved. Otherwise, forget about it. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we here at Bob and Janet Live know that you would like to censor anyone who would dare quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice. Raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. All right, here's Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1. Then we're going to go right to Tom in Detroit. All right? Proverbs 12, 1. He who hates correction is stupid. And nicer than God Christians will say, don't call anyone stupid. If somebody's stupid and you don't tell them, are you doing them a favor? Say, you're really a very intelligent young man. And inside you're thinking, you stupid fool. But outwardly, you're saying, you're really a very intelligent young man. No, he's not. He's stupid. He's rejecting correction. All right, let's go to Detroit. Now, we said, say goodbye to Johnny. Bye, Johnny in California. Thanks for calling in. Oh, and you can't win an argument with stupid, usually. In Michigan, Detroit, Tom, speak your mind.
Hi, fool.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, Tom, that joke came out of the commercial break, which most people in our audience didn't hear.
Yeah, they probably think I'm pretty rude.
Yeah, that was an internet-only KGOV.com, KGOV.com spot that you heard while you were on hold.
All right.
So
well,
anyway,
I don't really think you're a fool. I was just...
No problem.
I guess it's an inside joke.
It was funny, Tom. Thank you. What's up?
Hey, I was watching Fox 2 News. On the Detroit station here at 6 o'clock.
All right, Fox.
And they ran a story about a 17-year-old young lady who was very upset because when she was 7 weeks pregnant, she went to an abortion mill to get an abortion.
7 weeks.
And they performed the abortion, and then
they didn't
seven
get the...
more weeks later, she comes to discover that it didn't work, and she's still pregnant.
Ah. I was gonna guess that they didn't get the whole baby. Because sometimes they get half the baby, and so then the woman goes home and passes in her bathroom. She passes a foot, an arm, an eyeball, and then sometimes the woman has twins and they get one of them, and disfigure the second one. Sometimes they just disfigure the baby, just get a leg, and they think they're done.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she was still pregnant.
Yeah, apparently the baby made it through, very luckily. And so now she's 14 weeks pregnant, and they had a little sound bite of her being interviewed, and for some reason she didn't show her face on camera.
I wonder why.
I don't know.
Why isn't she proud that she wants to kill her baby?
And she's very upset with the incompetence of the abortion clinic. And I have a little quote here, part of her her soundbite. She says, 14 weeks, that's a baby. So now she acknowleges that at least
it's
a baby inside of her.
Hey, Planned Parenthood doesn't acknowledge that.
No,
the people she goes to kill her baby, they're happy to kill him at 14 weeks.
Well, she must have thought that at 7 weeks that it wasn't, but because of the way she said it. But now at least acknowledges that 14 weeks, that's a baby, she said.
Yeah, what a fool. I think Planned Parenthood will kill babies up to 14 weeks, 5 days.
Well, the sad part is that at the end of the story, you know, sometimes they say a thing or two, just how the story wraps up, you know. And the newscaster said, well, the clinic, you know, they're sorry about it, and they agreed to give her another abortion free of charge, and she accepted.
Oh, great. Now, doesn't that, what a tragedy. Hey, Tom, doesn't that prove the point we've been making for years that the pro-abortion crowd and the women killing their babies, even if they knew it was a baby, they'd still kill them?
Yeah.
So when they argue that it's not a baby, that's somewhat facetious.
Right.
Because the truth is, for most of them, we don't care if it's a baby. We know it's a baby. We're going to kill it anyway.
Yeah, and she might have been able to convince herself at 7 weeks that it's not a baby yet, but here she is on the network television telling everyone that it's a baby. And
she killed it anyway.
And then she's willing to murder it anyways.
Right. And that's, of course, the reality that, you know, one feminist wrote a book saying that let's get over it. We know it's a baby, but we have the right to kill it.
Dr. Kennedy's program about a week ago, he mentioned something that was written in Newsweek one time where it says something I'm going to paraphrase. It said, there's no question medically whether or not this is a life, but it becomes a matter of when does that life take precedence over the health or even the happiness of the woman.
Right.
He pointed out that they're saying that, according to Newsweek, there are times when you can kill another human being just because
for your own happiness, even. Right. Exactly. Of course, and that's the lion's share of the child killing in America. It's
right.
Like killing babies for convenience.
Yeah, and even the pro aborts admit that they're killing someone else, you know, but that's okay.
Very often they do. Even Planned Parenthood said that abortion takes the life of a baby after it has begun.
Wow.
That's a Planned Parenthood quote from back in the early 60s.
I had a question about sort of related topic about your friend Ken Scott.
Yeah, who's out of jail right now.
He's in?
He's out of jail right now. He's been released.
I was wondering,
for now,
what kind of work is he in, or how does he manage, or any of you guys? I mean, you guys end up in jail for...
It's hard. It's difficult. Ken Scott, his wife, is a saint, and she and his family has been very supportive, even though it's difficult for them. And they pull together. And when Ken is not in jail, he protests and he works very hard. He makes reasonably good money, and they try to use it wisely.
Does he have the type of job where he can have a month or here or there? I mean, is he able to?
Everybody has that kind of job. Everybody has that kind of job, because you go to jail, you get out, you get a different job.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering, if he has to do that or if he...
Yeah. Well, his current job, his immediate supervisor, is a strong pro-life Christian.
Oh, that's a good...
Should I tell people who it is?
What's that?
I'm asking my studio audience. Should I tell people who Ken Scott's immediate supervisor is?
Is Is it you?
No, it's Doug McBurney.
Oh, it's Doug.
Yeah. So Doug's my Friday night co-host. In fact, Doug will be on the show Thursday and Friday night this week. All right. Hey, Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
For calling. God bless you. Now let's go to South Bend, Indiana. Joe, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. This is Joe from South Bend. I called you last week.
All right.
About the homosexual issues that you deal with.
Oh, yeah, right, about whether or not we should treat former homosexuals differently.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you asked me to consider whether you said that you want to outlaw homosexual behavior.
Right. We want to recriminalize homosexuality.
Okay.
Restigmatize it. And all the three-pronged approach, recriminalize, restigmatize, and try to get them to repent.
And you said that on the bottom of the list is to get them to repent. Right.
Right? That's the least. If you prioritize the three, that's the least important. It's important, but that's the least important.
Well, my question is for you is trying to recriminalize their behavior.
Yeah.
That seems really, forgive me if I say this, but really wacky because whose world do we live in right now? We live in Satan's world.
Okay.
He has control of it.
All right, Joe, now is that your best argument? Because we could take your arguments for why it should homosexuality should be criminal, but your first argument to me is that this is Satan's world.
Right. Well, the
okay,
whole
so let me ask you, let me follow up that thinking, just that part right there.
Sure, yeah.
Jesus said that Satan was a murderer from the beginning.
Right.
And so since this is Satan's world, should murder be against the law?
Of course, yes.
Oh, it should? But wait a minute, this is Satan's world, and he approves of murder.
Right,
so that's ridiculous.
But if the world said and made it legal to murder, do you think that you would get it reversed?
If the world, let's say you're in Nazi Germany, and they say it's legal to kill Jews, do you
but the world
fight
said
against,
no.
Do you fight against that? And say, no, it's wrong to kill Jews. I don't care if the whole world says it's right, it's wrong. And we should recriminalize killing innocent people.
But the world said
Joe,
Hitler,
hey,
that
Joe,
was wrong.
Joe, but if the whole world thinks it's okay to own black men as slaves just because they're black, the whole world thinks that. So
not today.
No, but when it... Hey, Joe, are you intentionally being knotheaded, or do you
no,
want to
I'm
have
not.
A do you
I'm
want
not.
To have a good conversation?
I'm trying to.
Well, listen, when to have a good conversation when somebody makes a point you hadn't considered, or maybe even a point deep down you think, oh, that's a good point. Don't instantly reject it because you'll sound foolish. When the whole world thought it was okay to own black people. And if you were a Christian in the middle of all that, should you go along with it or try to stop it? Yeah.
No, well, no, you should try to stop
good.
It.
Good. Hold on now. Now, can this job be frustrating or what? We're in a commercial break. And Joe, I like talking to Joe. This is the second time I've gotten to talk to him. Been on the air for over 10 years. Taking, what, an average of 1,000 calls a year. So that's over 10,000 calls. And two of them have come from Joe. And I enjoy talking to Joe. But this job, it could be frustrating. Sometimes it takes three or four approaches to get people to listen and consider. And, you know, I wonder, maybe it's not fair, my reactions, because I do this for a living. I'm a talk show host, so I very carefully consider the arguments, the things that people say, very carefully. I listen to what they say, I weigh it, and I respond carefully. And hopefully I don't make absurdly, you know, ridiculous statements just because I want to win the argument. That wouldn't get me anywhere. Well, not eternally. If there were foolish people listening to the show, they might think, oh, Bob won the argument, even though I was just saying foolish things. So if I disagree with someone, I want it to be substantive and well thought out and not petty. So anyway, this is a commercial break, by the way, on the internet, kgov.com. So that's the goal that we have here at Bob and Yurt Live. And do we do that or not? You could, you know, when you write us a letter, let us know, let me know what you think of the way that the show is conducted, the discussions, the disagreements. Our phone number, well, you know our number, 1-800-ANYART, but our address, when you want to write a letter, is Bob and Yurt Live, P.O. Box 583, P.O. Box 583, Arvada, A-R-V-A-D-A, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. Arvada, Colorado, 80001. So if you do drop us a line, let me know what you think of the discussion here. So, hey, Joe, when you speak, I take the things you say. I listen carefully. I try to respond. And, you know, I appreciate if you do the same to me. So you're agreeing with my point that even though the world is evil, a Christian should stand for what's right. It doesn't matter how evil the world is.
That's true.
So if all the world thinks it's okay to kill Jews, and I don't know, you know, if we look at history, there were times like, say, the Assyrian Empire that pretty much destroyed the northern 10 tribes of Israel. And they didn't exactly have friends around the world that would come to their aid. Even the Jews in the south in Judah couldn't or wouldn't help. So if everyone in the world thinks it's okay to kill Jews, a Christian should still call out and say it's wrong, it's murder, it needs to be criminal to rape women, to kill Jews, to own black people. Those things are criminal. And so your main argument, I think, is it doesn't do the job. So you might have other arguments why you agree with Hollywood.
And, oh, I don't agree with Hollywood.
Well, on this particular issue. Because issue of whether homosexuality should be legal or criminal, if you look at our founding fathers, every single one of them believed homosexuality should be criminal. And in fact, homosexuality was a crime in America. It was a crime for the last 3,500 years and most likely before that. That's as long as we know. In the Bible, Old and New Testament, homosexuality is against the law.
Bob, I'm not questioning that at all.
Okay, so for 3,500 years in the Judeo-Christian heritage, murder, kidnapping, rape, and homosexuality and adultery, they're all against the law. And so now in the last 30 years, 40 years, we have decriminalized some of these things. Like adultery is now legal. And killing unborn children is now legal. And homosexuality is now legal. So you're saying that you agree with Hollywood, Hillary,
no, Bob,
and the homosexuals, and the humanists? Well, on this issue.
No.
Okay,
no,
you tell
not,
me.
This is not me. You haven't heard my point. You haven't let me speak.
Go ahead now.
You've
go ahead. Make your point.
From the moment go.
Make your point, Joe.
I agree with everything you've said about homosexuality.
That it should be criminal?
Yes, but it's not. The whole point is have a realistic look at your priorities. Now, you say that the last priority is to get them saved.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I have a feeling that that's totally wrong.
Okay, let's talk about that.
How are you going to change people.
Okay, let's talk about that part right there.
You don't let me explain about
repentance. Well, you just made your so you agree with me that homosexuality should be recriminalized.
You're not going to get it that way.
Okay,
though.
Well, I agree. I agree that I don't have any means of doing that, but I would still say that killing Jews and owning blacks should be criminal, even if I couldn't pull it off. And so being a sodomite, performing homosexual behavior, advocating for homosexuality, those things should be criminal, even if I can't accomplish it. I'm still going to state the truth.
Yes, stating it, but you said your priority first.
Well, that should be our priority. Okay, now let's talk about why. Let's say that let's not discuss homosexuality, since you seem to be more concerned about that and emotionally caught up in that argument. So we talk about a different crime. Let's say it's murder. All right? Or child.
No.
Or rape.
You cannot equate homosexuality with
I'm
murder.
Not. I'm not doing that. I'm trying to take an issue that you're not emotionally wrapped up in so you could see the principle.
I understand the principle.
Let's take. No, you don't.
Because, well, one thing.
You've never heard the principle
murder
before.
Murder inhibits or takes away all the rights of another person.
Okay, let's talk about selling drugs.
Does not.
Let's talk
Use
about selling drugs,
Joe.
Let's talk about selling drugs to children. Okay? Selling crack cocaine to children. We'll do that.
All right.
What's more important, stopping someone from selling drugs to children or getting them saved? And while you ponder that, I'll give you another issue. What's more important, stopping someone from owning a black man as a slave or getting him saved? What's more important, stopping someone from raping a woman or getting the raper wannabe saved? What's more important, stopping someone from robbing a bank? What's more important, stopping
their problem?
Huh?
If you get them saved, you won't have a problem.
I know a lot of messed up Christians. I don't know about you, but I know a ton of them who sin and commit crime on a regular, you know, that Christians do that. They get divorced. They're addicted to all kinds of problems. Joe, God has given us an obligation. It's the obligation of human beings to stop criminals. That is our obligation. And when we allow there to be a crime epidemic, God says we are guilty. When innocent children are being killed in your community through abortion, the whole community, God said, is guilty. On the other hand, when unbelievers reject Jesus Christ and go to hell, we're not guilty. We're not guilty because it's up to them. Now, I'm guilty if I don't. If I keep the gospel a secret, then I'm guilty, but I have an absolute obligation to stop crime.
Okay.
Whether or not the criminal is a Christian or not is secondary. If he wants to rape, if he wants to steal, if he wants to kidnap, if he wants to murder, if he wants to be a homosexual, those things are crimes, God says. They're against the law, and the society, the government should stop those things. And to the extent that the government allows those things, fewer people will become Christian. Fewer people will become Christian when the government says you could make pornography, you can prostitute yourself, you could commit adultery, no-fault divorce, you could kill your unborn children, you can starve to death sick, unloved, unwanted old people. When the government legitimizes, when it decriminalizes things that are criminal, it's harder to bring people to the Lord. It's not easier.
Okay, my next question.
I hope you're going to address everything I just said. If you're not, say, what? Bob, can I skip all that and make a different point?
Well, yeah, because I agree with everything you say.
I don't think so. I don't think you ever heard these ideas before in your life, Joe. This
yes,
is the
I
first
have.
Time you've ever heard these ideas.
But, see, I think you are equating two things that are not equal.
All right, go ahead.
You're talking about someone doing something to hurt another. Now, homosexuals, they hurt each other. They're consenting.
So since it's consenting, if it's a consenting crime, two people. Now, this is your second principle. Now, do I have to dissect? Joe, you're going to force me to disassemble this argument of yours also and waste more time? So if two consenting adults agree to commit a crime that really it's only going to affect them, therefore it needs to be legal. Is that what you're saying, a victimless crime? Well, the Bible said
it's already legal. So why not put your efforts into
You said they're not hurting anyone, just themselves. You're arguing that this is a victimless crime.
No. They're themselves.
Just themselves. Okay, yes. Now is that a principle? Are you saying that's a solid, say, biblical or godly principle that we should use to draw conclusions from? That if it doesn't hurt anyone else, therefore it should be legal?
No.
Right, because you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong if you made that argument. So the argument that there are no other victims, that's not a valid legal principle. It's not biblical. It's wrong. So how are you going to use that to say we shouldn't advocate recriminalizing homosexuality? How are you going to use a bad principle to make your point?
You know what? If the government recriminalized homosexual behavior, I wouldn't have a problem with it at all.
Good. Praise the Lord. See how much.
But how far we've gotten. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe, would you have had that? Would you have said that a week ago before you first called the show?
Yes.
That would have been your first response to the issue of recriminalizing homosexuality. That would have been.
It doesn't matter to me whether it's.
Well, good. Joe, you and I can help convince those in the audience who aren't quite with us that it's a good thing for homosexuality to be criminalized. Okay, so go ahead. Then where do you want to go from there?
There's two ways I can go. The more important question is how do you deal with a homosexual who has repented? Who does not live the lifestyle? Who lives?
We talked about that at length last week. So why don't you go your other route? Because we just rehashed it. We did it already. I don't want to do it again.
You said that homosexuals should be kept away from boys and this and all that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that, and I thought, well, you're making such a generalization about that. Then fathers should be kept away from their daughters.
That's not
true. There have been so many fathers that have molested their daughters.
Once again, Joe, and last week you sort of implied that you agreed. And so when you agree, we got to rethink it. No, fathers could be with their 13, 14-year-old daughters and alone, but they can't be with the neighbor's 14-year-old daughter alone on a trip to Disney World for a week. You see the difference? A father could take his 14-year-old daughter to Disney World for a week, stay in the same hotel room. He cannot take his neighbor's daughter.
Yes, I understand that, and I agree.
Apparently,
with that,
you don't, Joe,
because
you just used it as another bad argument.
No, I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm trying to make a point. I'm trying to get you to see that for you to say a generalization about every homosexual is, it's totally wrong, because you would have to use that same generation when it comes to fathers and the daughters, because there have been fathers, and a lot of them, who have molested their children.
All right. Joe's a fool. This Bob in here remind you to do right, risk the consequences.